Welcome to Communicate Like You Give a Damn, the podcast. Our guests share their stories and approaches to embedding diversity, equity, and inclusion in communications because, I mean, let's be honest, we know the power of language. And language leads to behavior. So thank you. Thank you for joining us in leveling up your communications. I'm your host, Kim Clark, and DEI communications, it's kind of my thing. So let's get into it. Let's learn more about how to communicate like you give a damn. Hi there. I wanted to let you know that what you're about to listen to is part two of my conversation with our guest. And I really encourage you to listen to part one in addition to. It can be in a different order, but make sure that you get the whole conversation. The conversation was so rich that we needed to split it up into two episodes. So take a listen, make sure you catch the first part, and enjoy. Let's talk more about race. So, you know, as white women rolling around in the world, to your earlier point of like, I donated, so I'm good, you know, and the conversations you have to have with your sons that I don't have to have with my son and daughter. I have different conversations with my daughter about her safety. And I got those conversations growing up, but I did not get the kind of conversations you have to have with your kids. And that is part of that privilege. So not living in that world every day where you're on the receiving end of somebody else's decision about you based on visible aspects. What can we do? What do you advise white women to do in your book, through your podcast, in your work, to keep it more top of mind that this is a reality for women who aren't white, and to help white women kind of get in that headspace or have more of an understanding of an appreciation for being on the receiving end of racism on a regular basis that we don't encounter?
Yeah, I think that is a great question. And it is really tough because I understand if that is not your lived experience, it is not going to be top of mind. And I think that a lot of times conversations around race and racism are scary because the words can be really difficult and not knowing what to say can be really difficult. And you want to say the right thing and you want to say it exactly perfectly. And you want to say it once and have it be sort of taken care of, I guess. And I think all of those things are very valid. Those make us human. And at the same time, you know, thinking about who are in your spheres, right? Who do you move with and whose perspectives are you seeing on a regular basis is really important. And I understand that based on demographics in the US too, your communities may be very white. They may be very homogenous. And then you may have to get this other narrative from things like podcasts, from movies, from books, from, you know, and I just encourage you to be really open to that. You know, my co-host tells this story because I'm not a big book club person. She is. And she happens to be in this all white book club. And she had suggested a book, which was written by a Black author. And one of the participants of the book club was like, do we have to keep talking about race? And so I think that mindset is what keeps us not open you are to the different narratives. And like, look, I get it. If you're getting it through TV, that is great. But you may want to start asking some questions too as you're watching TV. Like, first of all, is it only white people who can do house flips on HGTV, for example? You know, like, I think that the more you start to interrogate what you consume, right, be it social media, be it, you know, more traditional media, however, if it can't be your friend circles, if it can't be through your communities, like, the more you start to ask bigger questions. And I think we have to ask more questions fundamentally, because I think we assume a lot based on what our own experiences have been and what we've been taught. And those two things alone are not representative of what are the narratives out there, right? What is the America, like if we want to talk about a US centered experience, what is the American experience, right? It is not just the white cis male, you know, experience. And so I think that we ask more questions, we think about who we are around, whose narratives we are hearing. And if we're not hearing those naturally, we look for more. And then we start to continue to ask, well, why are people being treated differently? Whose stories am I not hearing and why?
Yeah, and that's really key for communicators to hear, is that I've worked with clients who I look at, you know, part of my remit with them is to look over their website and their visual representation as well as their language. And I'll just see stock image photos that over index on a homogenous demographic and completely leave out large swaths of other populations and communities. I also had seen a nonprofit and was working with a nonprofit, and I looked at their website, and one of the first things that came up, it was lots and lots of photos of primarily Black women on the website. And then the first words that came up across one of the first visuals was talking about, you know, helping the poor. And so poor and Black people is not helpful. Putting that association together reaffirms stereotypes. And for a nonprofit that serves this organization, I couldn't help but jump to, did somebody look like me put this together? Because I have a hard time thinking my mentor would put that word and those visuals together as a Black woman. And so, and poor is a condition, it's a situation that can be changed. And that's what this nonprofit is trying to do. So rather than, you know, putting it together, it looks and feels as an audience member when communicators do that as an association, that these go hand in hand. And so looking for that opportunity to break these stereotypes is one of the ways that communicators can play a pretty significant role in this. And so I appreciate your comments about that very much. I have so many things to ask you. One thing that I noticed when I was doing research on you, I looked at your website, and you have statements of what y'all believe in. And I love them all. And the one about community, I particularly like, because that's the point of this podcast, is for people who are communicators who know and understand the power or figure that there's power and possibility in diversity, equity, and inclusion. They already know the power of communications and they want to learn and get better and at putting it together and combining those powers. And so there's a community that has come out of this as DEI communicators or people who are learning how to put DEI, DEI lens on their communication strategies. So I love that you're talking about community is absolutely necessary. And I couldn't agree more. You were talking earlier about when you go to talk to someone of a particular community, talk to more than just one, because not one person can speak for an entire population. No one is in a monolith. And the same could be said as far as like, I'm not welcome in certain white women circles, right? So I can't speak for all white women. I'd love to. I'd love to vote for them on their behalf as well. But that's sadly, that's not the case. There's actually quite a bifurcation within white women demographics. If you go to the ones that, you know, have voted for Trump, and then there's this movable middle, this middle that is very highly neglected, which I'm talking to my clients a lot about, is like there's a neglected middle of all genders, not just women, but specifically white women. That's just like they're not over here. You know, they want an alternative, but they're also quite fearful of like more of the liberal progressives, you know, and we're not necessarily making a lot of space and room for them either. So we have to be that soft place to land. Otherwise we're going to push them away, and they're looking for a home, and they're looking for somebody that would you know, take them in, if you will. And so I'm doing a lot of work with my clients around that segment of their employee population that doesn't have a home. They feel caught between and kind of, you know, orphaned, if you will. So if you could talk a little bit about these statements and how they translate to supporting white women and particularly white women who are communicators and being better as communicators and how they're telling the story by, you know, in the way that they're living their lives.
Yeah, I actually had to go back and look at our statements because it's like, you know, like all good businesses who put those together 5 years prior, you know, I wanted to make sure all that, right. Yeah, we're still living in alignment with those. We are. So good news there. But, you know, I think that a lot of the work that Sarah and I do together, that I do individually, is really designed to focus on our shared humanity, right? And if we can get to that place, right? If we can focus on our shared humanity, then I think we can understand why it is so important to fight for all of us, right? And I think that that's really hard to do at times because we have been sold a narrative here where it is a focus on individual gain, right? And individual ability and this whole pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, that assumes that everyone started at the same place to begin with. And I think that that is false, right? It is a great working narrative for a very small portion of our country. And for everyone else, it holds us back. And it collectively holds all of us back. And I think I want to keep going back to the way we make change is it does not have to be something big. And I think that people think that change makers, like, it's got to be, you're at the front of every protest. You are super active in so many different ways. And I think that when we think about change like that, or we think about releasing statements that are going to be, you know, change making like that, it causes this paralysis, right? And if we cannot do that, then we're like, well, I can't do anything at all. I really don't know what to do. And so what I'm really trying to do is encourage people to think smaller in certain ways, right? Because sometimes smaller things are achievable in ways that big things are not, but small things done intentionally and repeatedly have this same change-making power, if not more, right? Because you're actually going to do those things and then you will actually be making change. And I think when we think about that, if we can all do that, right, that is the community of change. And if we can all continue to move away from, you know, I donated once, or I had this conversation once, because I don't think we think about that in many other facets of our lives, right? We are very committed to doing things intentionally that help us. But, and I mean, us sometimes as an individual, but what if we were committed to doing things that helped us collectively? And I want that same energy put into, you know, the same energy that you would put into anything that you would do individually to better yourself, that is what we need to collectively do to better our community for all of us. And so I think that that brings us back to community first every time, because a lot of the podcast is built around this concept of all of us or none of us, right? Because we either all succeed, right? Or we all fail. And the none of us concept is too horrible to really consider, right? So it's got to be all of us. So how do we get to all of us? And that is that question that I think we keep answering through community.
The Madeleine Albright quote comes to mind. There's a special place in hell for women who hold back other women. And I've had that experience, honestly. And so, and this goes to the larger feminism conversation, where there's been more of an understanding that feminism and white feminism are not the same thing, and that we as white women have to understand that historically what we've called feminism has been white feminism, and really taking care of our own community and neglecting, like, intentionally leaving out, especially women of color. And yet when we get to the Civil Rights Act, tell me as a lawyer, you know, if I'm saying this right, but it is, was intentionally built in to cross race, sex, gender, and, you know, LGBTQ plus movement has had a lot of gain because of the civil rights folks keeping in mind of other marginalized populations that white women like myself have had now the rights and privileges because of the civil rights movement, thinking of me without directly thinking of me, but thinking of others besides just themselves. And that's something that I think as those of us of my demographic have to be more proactive around. We have to be thinking outside of just what's best for ourselves, in crossing that line and having that whole community base that you were talking about. Before I ask you the question that I ask everybody, and I can't wait to hear your answer on this. So what is your ask of especially white women, white men, in these power positions of running communications and narratives and messaging for organizations in this particularly crucial time in history?
Sorry, could you repeat that start of it? I think it cut off at the start.
What is your ask of white women and white men in these power positions where we control and have influence of leaders, where we're controlling messaging, DEI, or just narratives, external? Channels, what is your ask of us of what our part can be, especially in this crucial historic year?
Yeah, one ask. I feel like.
Well, you can have five. But
no, but I want to make it simple, right? I don't want there to be, I don't want it to feel like a checklist because I don't think there is a checklist, right? I think that. A couple of things. One, the assumption that the way things have been done, something is the way that it is because it's always been that way. We have to interrogate that assumption, right? I think that that's why, you know, I have a favorite question, which is why, and I have a least favorite answer, which is because it's always been that way. Because I think that is true for a lot of things, but we have to ask better questions about why has it always been that way? And who does it benefit and whose comfort does it prioritize? And so I think if we take that broader lens, right, if we take the lens of like, we need to start asking these questions when we think about policies, when we think about communications, when we think about who we're talking to, then I think that gets us closer to the community, right? We need to ask questions of the communities that we're trying to serve. We need to listen to their answers and we need to incorporate that into our messaging because then we get away from what it's always been, right? And we get to how it makes it better for all of us.
Thank you. Thank you. And if I could tap into the lawyer side of your experience and expertise, a lot of organizations are afraid of those letters coming in, threatening, you know, legislative or litigation actions, you know, based on DEI goals, et cetera. So how can we support as communicators, our general counsels, in how we're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion that lowers any kind of risk?
Yeah, that is a great question because there is some level of ambiguity in what the Supreme Court said. And I think that we are at a time period where people are really testing and staying sort of on the conservative side of that test, I think, because you don't want to run afoul of litigation, which I understand. But I also think that there are ways that we can focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion that is broader than race-based, right? And if we are thinking about, and I was thinking about this recently, even with regard to college admissions, because I was doing alumni admissions, and a lot of the feedback that we got was because of the Supreme Court's decision, you can't ask these questions. However, you can think about asking it in different ways. And I think that the challenge is not the, or the result shouldn't be that we stop fighting for these things. The challenge is that we do it in more creative ways. And I think that this is going to require doing things differently than how we've always done them. But if we sort of reverse engineer it, right? If this is our goal, how do we get there? Maybe we change the questions. Maybe we change the focus just slightly enough, right? That's how what I would be saying as a lawyer, thinking about how you can strictly interpret or not so strictly interpret certain things, but still get the desired goal that we all should be really fighting for.
Yeah, because communicators definitely don't want to make our organizations more vulnerable by how we talk about it, but we also need to be impactful in how we talk about it. Mm-hmm. So we're not performative, but at the same time, making us vulnerable as well. There is, you know, especially if we focus less on the activities of DEI and more on the outcomes, what are the benefits mm-hmm. of DEI? Mm-hmm. Allows the opportunity for every employee to thrive. So here's the last question before we wrap up. And that is, what does communicate like you give a damn mean to you? Sound like, look like?
So there's different components of this for me. Like one is, and it may be counterintuitive, but I think that the key, there is a key here, which is listening, right? I think for a long time, we've said a lot, maybe without saying enough, or we don't listen to the groups whose voices should be heard. So I think we start there, right? And I think that there is a level of intentionality in communicating like you give a damn. That means that you're not just going to say something once. You are going to say it. And I've been thinking about messaging a lot, right? Because I was listening to a study that was talking about the more that you say something, the more people believe it. And even if it's not true, which has worked in certain former presidents' favor, the more that we can get vocal, the more that we can get loud, the more that we can do it intentionally, that to me, even in spaces, and maybe especially in spaces where it is uncomfortable, right? Where it feels like a stretch. It feels like I may say the wrong thing, but you know what? I'm going to say it anyway. That to me is communicating like you give a damn.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I have so been looking forward to this conversation, and I'm so glad that it's happened in this particular social context. What you and Sarah do with that podcast and the work that you're doing, specifically, you know, through the book and everything, and what you're doing, even that we can't see, we owe you a lot. And we thank you for your dedication to the work. And people who look like me need to take on more, obviously. That's obvious, but I want to say it. We have to be shouldering more. We have to be taking on more. It has to be more on the top of our mind and how we are looking at the work that we do every day as communicators. We have to be thinking more of how is this going to land with X, Y, and Z, and who do I incorporate, whether it's through this advisory board or hopefully we've diversified our teams. Just remind people what the name of the podcast, the book is, and how to follow and continue to stay in touch with your work.
Yes. So thank you again for this opportunity. I appreciate what you do. And I absolutely think that if it's going to be all of us, it's got to be all voices in there. So thank you. And if you want to find out more about the podcast, we are on all listening platforms. It's called Dear White Women. We have a website, dearwhitewomen.com. You can find out more about the book there as well. It's called Dear White Women, Let's Get Uncomfortable Talking About Racism. And then if you're looking to connect personally, I'm on LinkedIn. I think that's pretty much it. In terms of social media, I'm at Misasha on LinkedIn. And actually the podcast is on Instagram at Dear White Women Podcast.
Beautiful. Misasha, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you and Sarah and your work. And I'm very grateful that that this conversation is happening. It needs to happen. And may we take the lessons from it and listen to all episodes and read the book and put it all into action, especially if we're in control of narratives and communications and language. Thank you for being on Communicate Like You Give a Damn.
Thank you.
Okay, so what popped out to you from this conversation? And I mean, it may take a minute to process, but be sure not to brush off what you just heard. Look, you just need a partner to be with you through this experience and understand what to do next. So I'm inviting you to set up a one-on-one strategy session. All you need to do is go to communicatelikeyougiveadamnthepodcast.com and you'll see the button there. The more conscious communicators in the world, the better the world. So thank you for listening, and until next time, let's communicate like we give a damn.